I'd like to call to order the council work session for the city of La Pine at 6:02. And council come to order. I'd like to have a roll call vote tonight.
Dan Burkle.
Councilor Del McAfee.
Tom Greiner.
Stu Martinez.
Ken Mullenix. We have a quorum. Are there any added agenda items for the agenda tonight? Hearing none, I would like to move on to item four. It's an update of ODOT's Highway 97 Wickiup Junction project, and I'd like to thank the ODOT personnel for being here. So, take it away.
Well, my name is Amy Pfeiffer. I'm the environmental project manager for ODOT, and I also lead projects. It's kind of a dual position. So I am the project leader on the US 97 Wickiup Junction project, and I just wanted to give an update. We do not have any construction funds available for the project. It started many years ago, and many of you were probably involved in it back then, as an environmental assessment. And once we got through all of the environmental studies, which we've done, it's now categorized as in federal highways as a categorical exclusion, which means it's the same thing. It's just a little less environmental effort as far as the documentation goes. It isn't as big of a document. It's the same studies, the same environmental work that we did. So the project, basically the project purpose, is in Wickiup Junction, right where Burgess Road comes in, US 97 crosses the railroad tracks. And what we're trying to do with project is eliminate this at-grade rail crossing on US 97. And because of the complications of Burgess Road here, we had to do quite a bit of design effort to figure out how to get this here. And so basically what the project does is Highway 97 swings out right where Gordy's truck stop is, out into the BLM land, and then crosses over the railroad bridge and then comes back down onto its original alignment. Burgess Road has to be disconnected here to eliminate that at-grade crossing and the problems it causes with US 97 right there. And so what happens is Burgess Road will travel down the new highway, the old highway alignment, and connect up to US 97 right here with right turns only. So if you're coming southbound on US 97, to get off on Burgess Road, you can make a right turn and you can travel up Burgess Road. If you're coming northbound on US 97, again, you'll make a right turn here. And if you want to get on the highway, you make a right turn if you want to go this way, and you actually kind of sort of merge on the old highway this way instead of coming up and making this T. So that's kind of what the project entails. One of the last things we did since we've updated you is we did a value engineering study. And what that is it looks at ways to make this the best value you can. It isn't always lowering the cost, but it's looking at what's the best investment for your money. So they looked at a bunch of different options, and I have them kind of listed on the sheet for you guys. But basically, they're all around $24 to $31 million. And what we validated with the value engineering study is that Burgess Road does need to go to right-in, right-out turn movements only, because it only lasts for 4 or 5 years before it becomes too congested if we just tee it up and allow left turns. So we kind of validated that this design is the best design. But we looked at a lot of other options. We looked at taking Burgess under the highway with a different bridge. We looked at staging it and connecting Burgess Road up first with left turns and all that. And we kind of came back to this design. So that's kind of where we're at with the project. We've evaluated the value engineering results, and the steering team's going to meet and make a decision on the final alternative. We're going to take it to a footprint level plans by October of 2011. And then if there's money left in the budget that we have, we're going to go ahead and begin the right-of-way process. But again, we don't have construction funding at this point in time, so all we're doing is making it a shelf-ready project, so if funding becomes available, we could put it towards this. Any questions?
Yes, just one. When we worked on our comprehensive plan, we were given a document from Jim Bryant at ODOT. You can see it in the far corner of our comp plan map. When you look at that, do you see any fundamental differences between that and this?
No, it looks like
it looks pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
It really hasn't changed much. These these configurations of how these connect right here changed a little bit, but pretty much it's still fundamentally the same project.
Okay.
How much of a backtrack is it? You know, you drive by, then you turn right, and you go back again.
Right. There's about a half a mile that you have to travel additional. And we couldn't figure out a way to connect it up safely without having some out-of-direction travel. The only other idea we had was, you know, if you moved your local street that you want to connect down here somewhere, you could maybe... But you still have that complication of grade separating it from the highway, because if there's a high volume of traffic that uses it. And a couple of the complications with this that we haven't got a good solution to is bike-ped movements. Pedestrians don't want to go all the way down here to walk underneath this bridge to get back on the highway and walk up there. They're not going to do that. And there isn't a really good safe way to get pedestrians across on this alternative, or any alternative we looked at. So we're looking in the future design phases to working with the BPAC groups and those groups to look at different ways we might accommodate ped movements.
Would that be part of a project, though, when you build it?
Yeah, we'll have to look at some way to accommodate them.
Well, I mean, aren't you going to have to go over the top?
Well, we couldn't really do that. I mean, there's a lot... For instance, we looked at maybe making an undercrossing of the railroad, but the groundwater's too high. So it would be a kayak crossing rather than a pedestrian crossing. And going over is a couple $3 million more on the project. Pedestrian bridges are about $1 million, and plus you probably would end up taking out properties.
Okay, so then I'm not that smart, but if you can't go under and you can't go over, forget how it's going to be built. How are you crossing it?
Well, similar to the way they cross today.
So what? Okay, so you're just going to let them run across. Just a kid just darts across like he does now.
Well, we hope that.
I mean, you're not going to get
case
a gate. I mean, there's no gate going to drop. I'm assuming.
No.
For a walker or a kid on a skateboard.
There's no simple solution to it. And even if you built a bridge overcrossing, what we've shown in our studies in Bend is that pedestrians won't use it if they have to walk a block to get
to
it.
That's true, too.
So
how much was spent protecting the deer up at Sun River?
I don't know the exact amount, but...
So basically this will get built just... For pedestrians, it'll stay like it is.
Yeah. Under this first phase of this project. In the future, when you try to figure out what to do with all these accesses, that could be part of the strategy. Is where you funnel pedestrians.
Is that going to affect First Street and Reed Road?
No, first...
I can't tell on the map where...
This is up in Wickiup Junction.
Right.
And we're actually leaving the Rosalind Road connections and all these in place. We're not closing them with the project, so they would remain similar as they are today.
So how is that going to impact Huntington Road? Because I can see all the people from Ponderosa Pines, Bay Road, everything out Burgess, hanging left at Huntington and going out to Prairie or to Rec Road to get on. Because they're not going to come this way to go to work in Bend. So you're going to increase the traffic flow on those intersections significantly.
Well, we do have a traffic study that I could share. I could share the results with you, but I don't have it with me because I didn't anticipate, you know, looking at the numbers. But they did look at the whole area from a traffic perspective. And really connecting it up with right turns in and out actually makes Burgess Road function fairly well. Even though you have to go a half a mile, you know, total out of direction to get on, it's at least a right turn onto the highway and a lot easier and it saves us.
What road are they taking to go back up to Burgess once they take that?
Once you take the exits, this is the old highway alignment, right where 97 is today.
So they take the old highway back to Burgess.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I just have one last question. We're in the early phases. There isn't any funding. The right-of-way hasn't been captured yet, and sometimes designs will change based on the ability to acquire that right-of-way. Is it possible we'll see further refinements of this design?
There will be some further refinements. Right now, the right-of-way that we anticipate for this is all BLM land, so it's a federal land transfer process. There may be some actual county-owned land up in here where the park and ride is that we may need to make an agreement on. And then there is some small portion of the private property owner's property and the railroad. And the railroad is kind of the wild card. But we have met with them and gotten some agreement on what they will accept from our design already. So.
Go ahead.
What number is this project on the list?
You mean what priority is it?
Right.
It has no construction funding, so as far as priorities are, we're developing, getting it ready, because it is a priority, especially in the Central Oregon Rail Plan. It's one of the highest priorities to grade separate the railroad, and it's a high priority. 97 is one of our highest priorities, but we don't have funding to correct all the problems.
Yeah, which kind of makes me question why you spent money on the value engineer.
Well, we're required to.
Project ready, if it wasn't construction ready, or
right, we're required to at the milestone when we develop the footprint, because it has federal dollars attached to it.
So every project on that list already has went through that study, or
every project is over $20 million that has federal funding attached to it is required to go through that. Because they want to make sure they get the best value for their dollar, and it lasts a while. It was kind of a fun effort to actually go through, because we had ideas that we couldn't even have thought of ourselves.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, I'd be interested in seeing the executive summary on that.
I can send that to you. It's available.
Okay.
Has there been a study to find out how traffic is going to be affected on Huntington Road? And perhaps, instead of coming up and going through all this rigmarole that you got planned, for myself, I would probably go out Huntington Road or State Rec Road and cross up that way, and that's what somebody else said. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to impact that road a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
We do have a traffic study, and I could share the results with you if you wish.
And in that, there is a portion of Huntington that is pretty much up to grade, but is still gravel and dirt. Are there any plans in connection with this to upgrade that? I know that's county road, and that's probably a question
because
for them.
The point is that the future traffic couldn't have a study, because people will make decisions based on something, and so then that's going to impact Little River Road.
If you would share those with us, we would appreciate it.
I'll take
a couple more quick questions, please.
I was wondering, people that are going to take Huntington South versus going Burgess and 97 and turning around, they're going to come up to First Street. And then that's a hazardous place as it is. So that's going to be more traffic on First Street. So is the project for First Street and Highway 97 more or higher than this?
No, both of those are a priority on 97, I know, but I'm not familiar with the other project right now. The county is running a consultant process to look at the First Street, the 97 intersection. So I'm not familiar with the results of that or where it lies in the priority.
One more? Hearing none, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Can we keep the map?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. You just added $50 to the project.
No comment. At this time, item 5 is the public hearing on ordinance number 2011-03.
Do you want us to approach?
Yes, please.
We'll scoot as we do. Okay.
And if we could have staff.
Sure. Mayor Mullinex, what I would do at this time is read a brief statement that talks about the order of procedure tonight for your agenda item for the public hearing ordinance number 2011-03.
All right.
This is a legislative public hearing. The purpose of a legislative public hearing is to obtain public input on legislative decisions on matters of policy. Legislative public hearings are required for such things as amendments to zoning codes themselves, or comprehensive land use plans, to give you an example. These public hearings are generally less formal than quasi-judicial public hearings, and if you remember, quasi-judicial public hearings are for a specific piece of land. Somebody wants to build a store on a property and you're analyzing them. In this case, it's legislative and it does not
involve the legal rights of specific private properties or parties in a contested setting, but rather affects a wider range of citizens. So tonight for the hearing, the order of procedure will be as follows. The mayor conducts the public hearing generally in the following order. The mayor opens the hearing with the following statements. The case number of the issue, which we've already described, is Ordinance 2011-03, an ordinance adopting the procedures, land division, zoning, sign, and lighting provisions, and a companion resolution to approve the SDC mitigation concept. And I need to talk about this for a second. When we reviewed the ordinance with City Legal Counsel, because the SDC mitigation concept is not truly an ordinance, it has to be adopted using a different vehicle, which is the resolution process.
Right.
We will prepare that for you. Resolutions are easy to adopt. And that particular concept doesn't work like a zoning ordinance. It's more of a framework for you to use later on when you have a TSP and SDC ordinance itself. So I wanted to explain that because in the ordinance in front of you, you'll see that the SDC portion is missing. That will be done by resolution. You'll have that when we continue this hearing. Okay, so after the public hearing is opened, then there will be a call for disclosure by any council member to expose any conflict of interest or ex parte contact which may bias the outcome of this hearing. And you guys have done this before on other hearings. Then the mayor will call for any public challenge to the partiality of any member or discussion of disclosure statements. Then staff will describe the nature of the proposal for the council and summarize the staff report and our recommendation. The mayor will open the public testimony portion of the hearing. And then after that, council must determine the amount of time for each person to comment, and usually you'll do that based on the number of people who raise their hands saying they'd like to testify. You'll have people start testifying in this order. Those in favor of the proposals, followed by those against the proposals, and then by those with no particular advocacy. Then the mayor will close the public testimony portion and allow council to ask staff any questions. After that, any questions, the council will deliberate on how to proceed. The council may close the hearing after giving instruction to staff as to what changes they want made, or they may continue this hearing to a specific date and time to further review specific issues. If the council closes the hearing after giving specific instructions to staff, they may, upon a motion being passed by a majority of the council, close the hearing. Then, council may adopt, modify, and adopt findings and conclusions proposed by city staff or shall direct the city staff to prepare additional findings based on the record to support the staff recommendation and the council's final decision. So what you'll do at this point is go through your disclosure of ex parte contacts.
Okay. Are there any disclosures of conflict of interest or ex parte contacts by any members of the council? Dan?
Ex parte has to define that.
Ex parte contact is where you have specific discussions or have received materials that would be outside of this council meeting that you think would have relevance to what we're doing tonight. So if somebody came up to you and said, Dan, I want this in the sign code, make it happen, and you had a discussion about that, you should reveal that.
Deborah,
I'm just giving you an
Deborah,
example.
This is legislative. This is legislative. This isn't quasi-judicial. Why do you have to declare ex parte contact?
We still have done it in a normal matter of course.
Because they're supposed to have ex parte contact in a legislative process.
Right.
So you don't need to declare it. It's part of the process. It's what you want them to do.
Right.
I mean, they can't sit here and recite 20 people they talk to.
Sure.
There's no need to.
And in the past, this Council on Legislative Matters has disclosed that. If they don't want to, they don't have to.
But it's not required.
It's not specifically required. It's been a practice.
No.
Then I would ask the Council for consensus that we don't proceed through that, since it's not required at this point.
Yeah.
Stu? Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm trying to...
Well, let me say...
What Deborah said. As far as council being through this, as a councilor, I haven't been through this. It was some of the council before us.
Okay.
ahead have been through this. I think Councilor Greiner and Councilor McPhee have been through this, but I haven't been through this.
And what council's done in the past is if they feel they have a conflict of interest or something that needs to be disclosed, they just do it here and then we move on.
But I maintain it's not part of a legislative process.
It's been a practice of this council, but it's their choice.
Okay. I mean, because I think that it's not part of the legislative process. I guess you could do that on everything. Yeah. But I mean, I guess I'm saying you're getting some glare stares. Like you're thinking, gosh, are we doing something we shouldn't by not declaring? No, I mean, you are to go out and engage people. Mm-hmm. This is not application driven. This is, you're supposed to go out and find out from everyone in town. Should you have big signs, little signs, colorful signs, blinking signs? You could talk to everyone at the Chamber of Commerce. You could talk to everyone. There is no ex parte issue in a legislative process.
I agree with the city manager, and I have had contact with people and talked about all of this stuff, and I don't think, I think it's part of my job to have done that.
Actually,
and therefore, I would first like to ask council for a consensus that we move past this ex parte.
We'll make a motion.
Right.
Or if someone just wants to declare it, they could. Otherwise, probably then they just move on.
I've talked to lots of folks, but I don't remember all their names.
and the important thing is if you have a conflict of interest, that's important to reveal because you don't want it popping up.
If you were in a sign business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a motion on the table to forego the declaration of conflict of interest and ex parte contact. Ex parte contact.
I wonder if you just do nothing.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't
want to draw the question.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Motion to do nothing.
I have no conflict of interest.
Nor I.
Neither do I.
At this point, it would be good to open the public hearing so staff can give its report.
Then I would like to open this hearing so the staff can give their report.
Okay, before you tonight in your packet, you have a draft ordinance that includes the usual whereas statements, which serve as partial findings that describe all of the reasons why we're doing these ordinances. We have five ordinances and one resolution to come. And the reason we're doing these ordinances is because as the city's incorporated, it needs rules for land use to govern what happens in the community. So you can control land use and you have procedures to do that. These particular ordinances start with the procedures ordinance, the land division ordinance, the zoning ordinance, which is the biggest ordinance, covers all the uses that are allowed on particular properties, the sign ordinance, and the lighting ordinance. And you'll see in the broad ordinance itself your usual criteria and statements along with the approval section on the last page. It's in draft form, just in case there's something you want to add. We have received public comment today regarding the sign ordinance, and when we get to that particular ordinance, I'll read that into the record because I think it's important for you to hear. It was very helpful to get comments from Carlson Sign Company. We've worked with them for many years, and they went through the ordinance and gave us some great comments, and we'll be working with them on Monday to get those reviewed more fully. We also received a comment from another citizen about how the sign ordinance should look. And in this particular case, and I'll just talk about the sign ordinance quickly, the sign ordinance does not have headings and bullets that make it easier to read. We put those in last. Right now, we just want to make sure we have the guts correctly in terms of how much signage is allowed per site and the number of billboards, etc. So those are the kinds of things that are important to review in the sign code. Before we go further, I'd like to start with a brief description of the procedures ordinance. You've heard this many times, but for benefit of the public and because it's a public hearing, I need to talk about it a little bit. The procedures ordinance sets out the guidelines the process, the timing, the notice requirements, all of the recipes, if you will, for how you handle your hearings and process each type of permit. So that's what the procedures ordinance is about. It's well named. That's what it does. It sets out procedures. A copy of that is before you, has been before the public for quite a while, and since our last meeting, we have not made any changes to it other than to clean up a few typos. So it remains pretty much as you saw it last time. The land division ordinance is the ordinance often referred to as the subdivision ordinance that requires certain steps to be taken when you combine or split land. Just to make it easy, you have partitions, subdivisions, lot line adjustments, things like that. And we've talked about that pretty thoroughly in our previous work sessions with you. Since the last meeting, nothing has changed except cleaning up some typos. So I want you to be aware of that. In the zoning ordinance, which is the thickest document before you, the zoning ordinance regulates every piece of land within the city limits by its zone and type. So in this particular case, we took all of the comments from the last work sessions, which were significant. We had quite a few comments and things that we've collected along the way. And we revised the zoning ordinance in a good way. One, we've gotten rid of a lot of extra language that was not necessary. We've taken sections that were in the back part of the ordinance kind of drifting around and consolidated them. So where residential uses are regulated, you'll see all of the additional regulations for residential uses like accessory dwellings and home occupations. So for the reader and your citizens, it's going to be easier to maneuver their way through this ordinance. So you'll see that, and we were successful in getting pagination on it. Let me tell you, there was that was not an easy thing in this one because there was some funny computer things going on. What we will do is, if you're comfortable with this ordinance tonight, we will go back through and do the index so that all of the headings have a connection to the index page. So we're very pleased that all of the blanks have been filled in. All of the comments you gave us last time have been put into the ordinance, and consistency has really improved from our perspective. And as you remember, we had a gentleman talk about the light industrial zone. That's in. And we talked about that last time, too. Okay, moving on. After zoning, we need to talk about the sign ordinance again. Just give me a second. I want to get to the document that was sent to us today. Give me a second to breathe. One thing we're not quite sure of yet is whether the Bi-Mart sign that's along the highway, whether that has been permitted by the state as a billboard. It's one thing that Peter Carlson from Carlson Sign is going to help me with, because sometimes these older signs are actually classified as billboards, and that would increase our number from 6 to 7. And that's the only one that's in question. It's a you look at the trees as you're going north, and a little red and white Bi-Mart sign with an arrow on the west side of the highway. It's off-site. So technically it would be a billboard, but we...
Whose property is it on?
Well, we can't figure that quite out yet. So the long and short of it is, if our number is 6 and we need to go to 7, that's what it is. Okay.
Your definition for billboard is 200 square feet, is that... That's not that big, is it?
Actually, I think it's 300.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay, from Carlson Sign, and we had a great discussion today about their concerns. They would like us to have additional clarification for non-conforming signs, and that would allow copy and face changes on all existing signs without a sign permit. And that's typical for this code. That's not an unusual request. Under exemptions, Paulson is asking that for suspended signs on private property, they suggest a minimum clearance of 7 feet from the sidewalk below, because that's consistent with Bend and Redmond. We had 8, so 7's fine. And we don't think that's a problem to put that into the code. It's just the difference of a foot, and consistent with other communities. We had it a little higher. On illumination, they believe that we should allow halo illuminated backlit letters, providing halo lighting effects around the letters against the field behind. We certainly agree with that as staff. It's a good way to deal with lighting, and it's of low intensity.
What's a halo line?
Yeah, if you have
we have none down here. So, when there's no halo.
Only at Christmas time.
No. Okay. I thought you were being serious.
No, I am. No, I'm just trying to think, what's a halo?
If you have the letter cut out, then the light is behind it, so it just provides a glow around the letter. You usually see it for subdivision signs.
Oh, okay.
Alex, Derek, where are you at, everyone?
I'm just reading an email that Boston Sign sent to me late today.
Okay.
And I printed off and put it in the record, but you don't have it right now. It just came to me so late that I didn't have a way to get it to you. For commercial and industrial signs, they ask for greater clarification for the amount of allowed height for monument signs and ground-mounted signs. And yes, we see that in the code as something that we need to clarify. So the heights in there are fine. We just need to spell it out a little more clearly. On pole signs, they suggest spelling out the allowed height for pole signs to allow for clear vision, parked cars, landscaping, snow berms, etc. And that would be at the 24-foot level that we have in the code. Their other suggestion is that signage along the highway with a, you know, one sign for every 300 feet of tax lot width, they feel that's too much. They feel that's way too wide, and not all tax lots would have that width. And that's something we're going to deal with on Monday when I sit down with Kevin Wells from Carlson Sign to go over this detailed data. You're all welcome to come to that meeting if you wish, but we're going to be going over the technical details to make this ordinance a little more clear.
Time and place for that?
Well, we don't know yet. We just said either Monday or Tuesday about half an hour ago. So I can make sure you are all aware of that. They want more clarity on the menu board section of the code, which is perfectly fine. And then in wall signs, they feel that we should add an option for wall sign area calculation as greater of 8% or 1.5 square feet area allowed for each linear feet of lease storefront width. And that's to properly accommodate various architectural design features. So, for determining wall signs, we have a calculation in the code. So you get so much wall sign based on the amount of frontage of the building you have. It's typically 8%. Or in this case, 1.5 square feet allowed for each linear foot of storefront. And so, that's a little crazy to understand. We're going to make that more clear so that any business person picking up the document goes, oh, I get X number of feet for my building. And that's a good thing to do. On the second, I'm sorry.
The menu board, you just said more clarity.
They want us to spell out the allowances for two menu boards at 40 square feet apiece and one at 20 square foot apiece. There are two sections of the code that deal with menu boards. And everything that they're talking about is to make things more clear and readable, which is perfectly fine. We have it very technically oriented now. We can make it easier to read. They also ask that the wall sign area on the second and third elevations, meaning the other walls of a building, are clarified and provide adequate and appropriate reasonable sign dimensions for small storefronts. And that's fine. We're willing to do that. We want to make sure businesses have appropriate signage. So if you have a small business and it doesn't make sense just to have one frontage sign, you need to wrap it around the building, then that would be appropriate. Their suggestion for awnings is to clarify that the intent be applied to awning sign copy, not the overall awning dimensions. And that's something we'll have to work out, because people can abuse signage on awnings, and all of a sudden you've got all these huge letters on the awning, and that's considered the whole sign. And that could really disrupt how a building looks. So we want to have some balance with that. And I'll work with Kevin on something that's more reasonable. Let's see. He talks about theater marquees. We'll make that more clear. We don't often have theater marquees, but if we did, we want to make sure that the language is easy to read. He would like to have us add more size to projecting signs. And I have to agree that projecting signs coming out from buildings in certain cases in your downtown area is more aesthetic, more pleasing than a wall sign. So we'll look at some options there to make sure that we're not going too far with the square footage allowed. He would like 40 and we're a bit less. On monument sign height, if you remember last time we talked about monument height, monument signs, they're the blocky ones connected to ground by a fixed unit.
Like
or
the city hall over here.
Yeah.
The new city hall.
And he believes that we need to have a higher height. 8 is too low. That 12 would be more appropriate given the snow that occurs around here. And I think that's a great suggestion. One of the things that they are very concerned about are comprehensive sign plans. And if you have a shopping center, typically the property owner will develop a comprehensive sign plan so each business or tenant knows how much sign he gets and where it goes. That's a very practical way to deal with a shopping center. Kevin believes that these are extremely expensive in terms of staff hours and business customers' staff time cost to prepare and submit. He believes that they're not good in terms of a cost. I'm summarizing in terms of a cost benefit. They say they've done tons of them over the years, but it really hasn't produced anything that's better than an individual sign review. So they're asking that be eliminated. And I think I want to bring back some information to you before we do that. There's a reason for shopping centers to have some control over the number of signage and some regularity within the shopping center complexes. So, yes, you can't just do a checklist on those kinds of sign requests, but in some cases I think you do get a community benefit. But I want to talk with Kevin first to make sure I completely understand his concern before we do any changing in the code. On billboards, we just want to make sure we know the exact number, because that's important. And because these codes will not be law for the city that's implemented and used until the county and the city agree when the transfer takes place, you're essentially going to have all these codes adopted. And then there's going to be a gap time where people still have to use the county code, because the intergovernmental agreement that regulates when the city gets its full authority and when the county transfers jurisdiction is really a budgeting matter. And that hasn't been decided or reviewed yet. So everybody should understand that there's going to be a gap time where you're going to have your codes in place, but they're not going to be enforced because the county codes will remain. Does that make sense? Okay. I had somebody today call and they didn't get that. Kevin would like us to expand canopy signage on service stations, and I want to look at that very closely. Service stations have so many methods of advertising, just in their shape alone, the way they're lit, the fact that they have allowed signage for pricing that's incorporated into the pumps themselves. I mean, the whole thing is a sign. You can't usually miss a gas station. So I want to go over with him very carefully why he thinks we don't have enough signage for gas stations. But I have a feeling that we could flex that up. And then the last thing that they mentioned is In terms of neon tubing and the number of milliamperes that are allowed for the regulation of light, we want to go over that and make sure we have the right technical terms. And that's all they had. There may be more things as we go through our conversation on Monday or Tuesday. Let me see his other comment here that just came in. Okay. Still on the seven billboards with the one in question. And Peter Carlson is going to do a little research with ODOT for us to see if they have any additional permitted signs that we don't know about or those that are in process. So that will be very good. We have one other letter, and Rick forwarded that to me today, and this is the one you have a copy of. And it's from Michael Jensen. And he says that he's reviewed the sign ordinance. He can't attend tonight. He would like it to be easier to read, which I think when we add in the headings and index will make it easier. And we're going to put in the charts that we talked about, but those go in last because we don't want to have to do that three or four times. I'm going to summarize anything else. Was there anything else in his document you wanted to discuss? He seemed to be very supportive. He just wants it clear and concise so business owners have something easy to
read. He liked the pictures of the different signs.
Yeah. And Ben has some good examples that we're willing to stuff into this ordinance. And, you know, length, width, what a pole sign is, that kind of thing. So, for signage, we've added in quite a few things. We'll discuss the other issues on Monday or Tuesday with the sign company to make sure that we understand fully what they're asking for. And if it's reasonable, I think we should make those changes and get that back to you. What I anticipate tonight is that we have some things hanging out there. I expect this hearing to be continued, but not too far along because we need to get this completed pretty quick because of the grant requirements. So we have also heard today, and I'm sorry I'm jumping around, Steve Shipsey, who's in the Attorney General's office, is nearly complete with the comprehensive plan directives, which we call the compliance order. So it's important to get through this so that we can finish the other issue with the comprehensive plan and get that done. So the state's going to give us the compliance order shortly, and that will have directives to us on what we need to do to fix that. There's also a quick timeline on that. So when we do decide to continue the hearing tonight, we'll need to talk about dates, and we can talk about that a little bit later.
Deborah, on that plan, when you said it here a few minutes ago, just on the when this would take effect, you're saying because the county is currently doing our planning.
Right.
In other words, when someone applies, they go to the county.
Right.
So when we're done approving this, is this a and in between until we take that on, they would basically these aren't enforceable or they're not.
That's right.
Just because the county won't enforce a city ordinance or a zoning code?
They don't want to.
They don't want to.
It would be really cumbersome for their staff to have to learn new codes. And
so
I'm not sure
timeline,
they want the liability.
Do you think, because I talked, Nick and I went back and forth a few times today at the county, and so because I'm working on the budget, so when do you think we would reasonably assume taking applications here through a consultant or somebody? Obviously, you have to have a planning director. We'll have to contract that out.
I think your next fiscal year is the best time to start that.
You mean July 1?
Not this fiscal. The one coming up. So that'd be...
well, that's over a year from now?
2013.
So when what you're saying is that all these ordinances we're approving will just sit stagnant for a year?
Yes. You could modify and refine them. But until you, the city and the county, agree on the transfer, and you have the ability to fund and enforce your own ordinances, some of these would sit. That's why we're calling it the gap time.
It could happen sometime in that year.
depending on...
How about this one, Dick, but like January 1st or something, at least halfway through, because I know we will have to put in money, because he sent me the revenue side, because people say, well, you're taking all this money on planning fees, and I suspected they were fairly small. When you take out BioGreen, which was a one-time thing, we took in, so far this year, $5,000 when they've taken it. And that's them doing, meeting with the people, sending notices when they need to, doing all the stuff. Bottom line is, there's no money to be made. You're going to lose money on it. So we're going to have to put money in. And so as I'm doing the budget, we don't have software programs for planning. We don't have anything. So when someone comes across the counter, you'll have a new city manager January 1st. So all of this needs to be thought through.
I think it's going to take you a year to ramp up. I really do.
Okay.
And when you talk about staffing, getting the other things in place like applications. So, this tells you what to do, but then you have an application form. You'll have to have a hearings officer, and contract with somebody to do your higher level planning. All that stuff takes time to ramp up, and you just don't have the activity yet to support that.
Well, no, we don't, and we're not going to for a few years.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to have. Maybe that's something we need to talk about at kind of a work session, because when you said that, all of a sudden it perked me up. It's like, okay, because Nick and I had 3 or 4 emails today.
The county would love to dump on you. And
but see, they like things that make money. For them, at this amount, it's $400 a month.
Yeah, and it's more of a complication for them than something that they'd rather do. Every time I've talked with Nick, he said, hey, when can I,
Okay. I told him no sooner than January 1st. I already told him that today. So just that's something to be thinking about. Because you're right, there's a lot to this taking it on. If you're starting a new city manager January 1st, they come in here the first day, and that's the first day of taking on the planning program. That's probably a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's definitely a Maalox moment.
So it could be, it's going to have to be July 1st. So that they're in here for a few months and we get...
And you're going to have to find somebody who can do your planning half time, and it's not easy to find those people. Your city manager may have those skills. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but we've talked about getting a city manager that has public works skills. So one thing about it, city managers are not going to be city managers, public works directors, and planners. That combination is going to be here. So that's why it's complicated.
I thought that we had someone on staff who has planning background.
Well, we do have some planning background. I said to Nick, I think what the city manager and with someone like that, we would take the initial applications and we can do we can do that initial vetting and going through, but you do have to have obviously a planning director.
Yeah.
So is it something we're going to do hourly on a contract where just so much a month, you pay him X amount a month, or do you have anybody or not? You might have an application, you might have five, you might have none. For budgeting, it all makes it very tough to figure out. I want to say 10 grand. I can't remember now, but I don't remember, but anyway.
For the gap? For the gap?
In the planning.
For
next year.
Good.
I put 10,000 in that. Also put money in for code enforcement, but if we're not going to enforce the codes, because they're not going to be in existence, which is fine. You need to make sure we have the money, because then the next year you're going to need it. If we don't spend it, we won't have it when you need it.
And when I heard from the gal from ODOT today, I thought, okay, remember what LCDC said about acreages and all this stuff? Boy, this is a little fuzzy, so I need to carve out of some of the acreage what they're planning for this off-ramp, because that'll create somewhat of a no-man's land. Well, it's helpful for us in the long term.
Right. It takes away acres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was information that was useful today.
You got a question to do?
I'm wondering if... I've heard there are other cities who would take the planning piece and do exactly, I guess, what the county has done, except that they would enforce our code.
You mean we contract to another city?
Yeah, contract to another city.
Like Bend or something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's... we could look at some of those.
Sure.
We still... Mm-hmm. Let's not take the hearing tonight. Maybe that's something we're going to have to flush out. But no, those are all possibilities. Bend right now, because they're trying to keep their planners on staff, mm-hmm. for them, they very well would share their software system, all kinds of things, and applications, and you name it. So that could buy us two or three years. But
yeah, I only bring it up because people need to understand there'll be this gap period of ramping up. Okay. And the county's doing an okay job now of dealing with our citizens, and that may be the most efficient thing, whether they like it or not. Okay.
Well,
so
let me just say also, I think we need to realize that I get asked regularly, when are we going to get our own zoning and our own planning commission codes? I mean, this is regular. It's not like once a month or, you know, and I think it's an issue that we need to be able to explain to the citizens about why we're waiting another year. I mean, granted, I can understand the whole idea about all that needs to be ramped up for, but a year just seems like a long time.
Well, if you had staff and money, it would be no problem.
That is the issue.
Yeah.
Maybe we could make it third quarter or something, you know, April 1st, or week to get it. But, this needs to be thought out, because everything she says is true. I mean, there is a lot more to it. Is there a way to have, like, say, the nuisance ordinances or any of those?
You can adopt...
Because the planner isn't necessarily going to do that anyway, code enforcement.
There are a few things that you may want to adopt separately that are critical issues right now that you'd like to take care
like
of.
Like chickens.
Well, I was thinking...
You meant dogs.
Nuisance issues. I hate to even mention it, but sidewalk maintenance, burning barrels, drainage issues. You know, there's a few things that are always nagging us. How do we deal with it? You might adopt something separately. That's a possibility. But I want to talk about one thing, because people are waiting for everything to come to fruition. And a lot has been accomplished. You have a comprehensive plan for your new community. We're going through the process of getting a 20-year plan approved, and then all of your implementing ordinances, so you have a complete package. For a new city, that just takes a while. And it doesn't feel tangible, but every time you look at that map, you know, there are 2 years' worth of citizen hours that help shape it. And that's what I would tell people.
You know, that's all easy to say, but you know, we understand that sitting in this room, and we look back on our past, and we've got the same people asking us, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's easy to say it here, but you've got to do something. I mean, especially with some of these nuisance ordinances. Mm-hmm.
That I think we should have a goal of doing it ahead of a year. I think we can
phase it out, too. Like do nuisance, the code enforcement, nuisance.
Yeah, we have.
I think we should have a goal before the new year.
We know it's not before January, so somewhere in that 6 month between January 1st and June 30th next year, let's, you know, and try to figure out what our different options are. And I can talk to Adele more about Bend and some of the other things. And there's ways to do it.
And we're cooking as fast as we can and kind of pushing you along on some of this stuff. But what you're talking about is a great council topic for a council meeting. So I don't want to get you bogged down.
And Rick's alluded to that in that, you know, we need to talk more about this at another work session.
The fact that our comp plan may not be approved for a few months anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, I mean, by the time you're going to submit it, and then they're going to work on it, you know, we're going to get the grant payment. But the fact is...
Yeah.
It's going to have to go before that commission, and then they could go back and forth, and you know.
That process has been. And you don't know, James and I nag them every day. Where's our letter? What's our letter? What can we do?
They're just giving us our compliance letter.
Yeah, right? But that's a very important thing, because it says you're partially acknowledged. That's a huge thing that needs to be done. Plus the things they want left to do, and the fact.
That was 2 months ago.
Yeah, part of their... forgot to take it to one committee.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's taking them 2 months to send us a letter to tell us what we have to do.
Yeah, I know. Okay, last two ordinances we need to talk about. The outdoor lighting code. Only typos were corrected, and the mayor had a few things to point out, so we made those changes. And then the last thing we'll do is double check with the numerology to make sure that the numbers line up. Because after you make a few changes, sometimes those things get messed up. So I'm very happy with the lighting code, and I think you'll find it's a good thing for the city long term. Last one that's not an ordinance, but we'll come back to you at the continued session as a resolution, is the SDC mitigation concept. We took out the language that referred to an ordinance, and essentially this concept is data that can be used as a basis for discussion purposes in preparation for the Lapine Systems Development Charge. So you've got your framework here, you've got your definitions, you've got samples of how you would apply different components of the Systems Development Charge, and that's about as far as we can take you without a capital improvement program and a TSP. So you're well set up, but this is all we can do at this point, is provide you a framework. That concludes our staff report, except for our recommendation that you continue the hearing to a date specific so that we can make these final changes and do the final cleanup. We need a week or two to do that. We would like to get this completed in May. And after you have testimony from the public hearing, it's probably something the council should talk about. Are you okay if I stay up here?
You're fine. And at this point in time, we would like to open the hearing to public comment.
John Thomas.
Do you live in the city, John?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I live on Holiday Drive up off of Day Road. I am the chair of the City Planning Commission, through ordinance. The my recommendation would be to at least, like Rick was saying, to start something in the form of code or nuisance type enforcement prior to the complete changeover. You know, what we do here, as Mayor said, is that we've been incorporated now since 2006, and we there's a lot of citizens that are saying that they don't see what the city's doing. They don't see any tangible things. They don't see the streets, I mean the sidewalks, being any more cleaner. They don't see the signs being cleaned up. What I'm hearing is what they are not seeing. If we just begin with a small budget to start enforcement, it just in a part-time basis or whatever, I think we really do, rather than just wait. If you wait till you have all your ducks in a row, you notice ducks never get in perfect row. So what will happen is you'll wait forever for those poor ducks to get in a row, and nothing will ever happen. So what you have to do is you say, well, four out of the six are in a row, let's go, and call it good. So, you know, my recommendation would just be to try to begin this planning department sooner than later.
All right. Thank you very much. And what I'd like to say at this time, could I see the hands of those who would like to make comment? Okay. The council would like to decide about how long the comment period is. We've got, what, five? Four? Everybody okay with 4 minutes?
Sure. Oh. I'm Vicki Jackson. I'm from 17346 Meek Court. I have a couple comments. I'd like to take us back to June of 2010. Okay, June of 2010 and even prior, what the residents and the community wanted is a full-time city manager to set up the office and start to get things running. So we paid the League of Oregon Cities. Roger Jordan came here, did a whole thing. Rick is here now, and Rick started, and he was only supposed to be for 6 months. Within that time, we were supposed to have a full-time city manager and be on our feet. I know the sewer and all that mess happened. You extended his contract. And if we had done that, we would have had our full-time city manager, I believe. That's one issue. The second issue is, I don't understand why we did all these ordinances, and I'm sorry I was late. Is it that we won't be able to enforce these ordinances for a whole year? Is that what was said?
Well, what was said, Vicki, was that because of the need to ramp up, you know, to get all the forms in place, get all of the pieces together to actually make it an effective and working planning commission and ordinances, mm-hmm. it would take that long because there's a lot of things that have to come into place. We've generally heard that based upon the things that needed to be done, it would take that long.
Okay.
Right. But I would like to also say that I'd like the comments to be strictly associated with the hearing on the ordinance.
Yes.
And if you have any other comments around, or anybody has any other comments around, you know, the contracts with the city manager and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. we do have a public comment section, so we'd like to.
It's directed. I'll just finish up real quick. I know that you got a grant for the ordinances, and we went through, you know, picking the same people, which is fine, and then their job was to do the ordinances, but I was kind of thinking, it's like, you haven't built your house yet, you purchased your furniture, but you actually haven't even built the house. It kind of seems like we're doing, what is it, the cart before the horse? Because if it's going to take a year, I mean, you're probably going to want to change these ordinances when that year comes by. There'll be different things. And really, as a city, you're supposed to be providing four services. You're only providing one service, which is the plowing and the snow removal. You don't have an IGA with the water and sewer. You don't have a sheriff. I don't understand why you don't have a contract with the sheriff for protection. So you're only providing one service to those people paying the taxes.
Could I talk you into waiting for public comment?
Oh yeah, I'm done. Thank you.
Ma'am?
I'm Pat Stone. I'm really not sure how to handle this, but...
Are you in the city?
No, I live out...
That's all right.
Okay. I inquired at the chamber today about putting up a temporary banner for an event that I'm helping organize, the Relay for Life event. And I got permission to put a banner up on our signs like the rodeo did last year at the... the Welcome to the Pine signs that we have on either end of town. But then I questioned further, if I'm going to make a banner this year, can I put it up next year just looking ahead for this event? Because we have done it for many. So I was recommended to go home and read the 36 pages, which I honestly, scanned it. And I think I got close to the right place on page 16. But basically, I don't want to waste my money on building a banner, a temporary banner, is what I believe your terminology is, for this event, just to announce an event. I would like to know where to go to get the guidelines so that this banner can be usable for year after year with proper date changes and all that.
What I'd be happy to do is to get the dimensions of what you want to do for your banner. If you could, you know,
2 foot by 2 foot by square feet. And I saw that you had something even larger than that, but go for it. What else can I say? This is all preliminary on my part, too. I'm just kind of doing the groundwork, and this just happened to happen today, and your meeting is tonight, so I skipped a couple things to be here to see what to do.
It's timely. And what I'd like to do is compare with the county sign code.
Okay.
And ours is not going to be a problem for you to have the banner, but I want to know what the county does specifically for banners and let you know that. Could I have your phone number?
536-2258.
I will compare the two, and if they're both, well, I'll call you anyway and let you know how that works.
If you don't mind, email's a lot easier.
And your email?
I'm not a lot.
Sure.
Jem Stone. GEMSTONE
mm-hmm.
at venmet.com.
I'm a pretty open book in this community, so I think people, anyhow.
So we'll get you the data to let you know whether your investment in the banner makes sense.
I really appreciate it.
Sure.
All right.
You have a good idea.
Very good.
Thank you.
Robin?
Robin Marisol. I don't live in the city, but I do own two commercial buildings in the city limits. And actually, she just proved the same point that Adele proved earlier, was somebody had to explain what those ordinances meant because it was too difficult to read. And I have to go along with Mike Jensen on that. Maybe some kind of summary or having some examples, some formulas, so that the average person can look at that and say, oh yeah, I can do a 2x8 banner, instead of, oh my gosh, I gotta read 36 pages, I don't understand the formulation of square footage to linear feet to whatever. And that's just my comment, is can we please summarize that, make it simpler for the average Joe to understand.
I think, like, a cookie chart.
We could do some little sheets of, like, temporary sign in front and back. You can show examples. You can say, this is how big, this is how long they can be up. We could make that out. Because, like, the shopping center sign that might take 3 pages in there, we'll know your shopping center will take 2 years to get one built. We'll know, we'll have lots of advance warning. You know, gas stations. Yeah. We need to get to the stuff that the average person is putting up on a home occupation, a temporary sign, that kind of stuff, that we can put it in a cheat sheet that gives them those.
And for example, the temporary signs are not associated with square footage, generally speaking. They're for an event that's somewhere else, but they're putting them out on the street or something.
And oftentimes those, because those tend to change, is the code, when you look at the code tends to stay the same, and what happens is those things that you're talking about when you're ramping up and you're preparing the applications, you're preparing the handout, public information materials, those are the things that you tend to start to create that are informational to the public that explain the code. And oftentimes you do it because those are easier to change. You just change something, and rather than going through a whole ordinance amendment process, you have to change the code. So
I do think that Robin's point's well taken.
Yeah.
And I think it would be easy enough to understand that, that it's inherent in the city's staff's way of doing something to actually put those kinds of things in place.
Yeah.
I've seen them in other places, and it's easy to accommodate. And we do, because we are Lapine, and we want this to be a simple way of doing business down here. I know that I can speak for myself and hopefully the others, that we want to make it easy for everybody.
See, those are some of the things we can create over the next few months.
Sure.
Pending this and getting going.
Okay. And for the record, what we did at the top of the sign code was a notation that chapterization, codification, quick reference charts will be added after your discussion. So
okay.
We put it in writing.
Okay.
Education.
Next question, please, ma'am.
Question, no. Renee Kapp from Always Signs. I don't even live in the city. I live in Crescent. I appreciate that Kevin Wells from Carlson Sign was consultant. I have a sign company. I was not. I would like to have been. And so you may now. And I've done 32 years of OSHA work, and I find the 36 pages difficult to read. Mm-hmm. So I also want it simpler. South Lake, Texas has a sign code that is 39 pages long, has pictures, shows malls, shows what a primary access is, what a secondary access is, what an elevation is. It explains it so anyone can get it. And
what was the name of that again?
South Lake, Texas.
I think that was in your first email, too.
It was in my first email, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Lastly, I have agreed to write a under 500 words in the Eagle every month explaining the sign code, and I would like that to be, I would just love it if you would call me and we could interview you and take one little piece at a time.
That'd be great.
I'm a graphics person. I can make it happen.
So like a small chunk at a time.
A small chunk at a time, so we can explain what zoning is, what that means, what square footage is, and I can easily do a chart that shows the elevation, that shows, like on Burgess Road, it goes this way, and you've got buildings here and buildings there and buildings there. Well, which one, if the entrance is on a side street, not on Burgess, is that the square footage you're going to go from, or is it this side?
The primary, sure.
Yeah, so things like that that are difficult to understand.
We could have a whole, you know, section on temporary signs and really get people excited.
And it's all set up, so let's do it.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Now, I think that's a very generous offer. Thank you very much.
I need your contact data.
Oh.
The next question, please. Okay. We will. Oh, yes, ma'am.
So, is each section going to have a table of contents, and then the main section?
You know, I think I will. I think I'll add a quick table of contents for each of the ordinances, mm-hmm. so that when somebody looks at it, if they just want, for example, lighting, they just want to know what the regulation is for a particular zone, mm-hmm. they could get there. So I think that would help people find things.
It actually does, and my experience that I really fought that so many table of contents, but everybody seems to like it.
Yeah. And if I could master the hyperlinking, that would make it easier. One thing I want to mention at this point is the council may close the hearing after giving instruction to staff as what changes they want made. And you may continue this hearing to a specific date and time further to review specific issues. What I've heard tonight is focused on the sign code. So what makes sense to staff is that you continue the hearing to a date for that specific issue. And that means you don't have to open everything up for, oh, that's mine.
For the rest of the...
for the rest of the ordinances. Now let me get to a calendar.
Is that so? Well, ready?
Does the council have an opportunity to comment on anything at some point, or
you mean everything? I
close the public.
Yeah, we're not going to close the public hearing at this point, but we'll close at this time public comment. And it's now something for us to. Talk about continuing the hearing. The question has been asked if we want to continue the hearing on all of the portions of what we've been here with tonight, or do we feel comfortable enough that we can only return for more comment of the sign ordinance?
Well, I think that... Should I start?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. I think that we can leave it open for the rest of the ordinances, because we probably are not going to receive a heck of a lot of comment, but this just leaves the door open. And then, you know, then if anybody has additional comments on the sign, then we can hear those as well.
I agree.
Stuart?
I feel more comfortable leaving it all open.
Okay.
Me too.
Therefore, we'll.
Since it's the city's first one.
Sure.
And no need to. Word gets out there, people may want to make some comments.
Then we're going to have to wait a year anyway, so we might as well.
Get it all changed at the same time.
So after your council discussion, figure on a date. When you do leave it open for everything, if something does come up, you can ask staff to make the change, and we could, if it's a small thing, we could do it right then and there, and then still be able to adopt if that's your choice. And I don't want to push you. I just want to make sure you're aware of the options in front of you.
When do you want to have a meeting? When do you want
to? I'm looking at the calendar. What you want to have it in
May?
In May before the 15th.
I'd sure like no later than the 18th. You got to give me some time to work with the sign people.
Yes.
And so if I have this week, a couple days next week.
Well, the 13th we have a meeting. You know, we can just put it on, have it at the beginning of our meeting.
On the 13th? I could do my best for the 13th. God, that's Friday the 13th.
No, I'm looking for March. Oh, wrong, excuse me. No, I was looking the wrong month.
We've got the 11th and the
16th. We'll be meeting on the 11th.
On the 11th?
Yeah.
I'll do my best.
Well, because that means we've got the budget meetings coming and different things. So.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do the 11th.
Okay, so we'll do 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
5 o'clock.
How about 6?
6.
Yeah, we should be consistent.
6. It's easier for folks to get here and
okay. And then okay. 6 and 7.
This doesn't take that long usually.
All right. Yeah.
And we'll have everything wrapped up for you.
Yeah. So we'll start off the public hearing that night and then move into our council meeting.
Okay.
I was going to wait. I know there's a time for council comments later, I guess. But what I had to comment on, if everybody agrees to it, it might be that we'd want to have a little longer time before we do this. And if I'll just say, if I can, that these graphic illustrations and the indexes and all of those things, I feel like those ought to be available to public in advance, not after we've adopted things.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They will be in advance.
Okay, so long enough so that people have a chance to look at them before the last hearing?
So yeah. Is the 11th enough time is the question.
That's the question, yeah.
Which is the 25th of May. That's
tight.
That's what I thought.
Is the 18th available?
Well, it's Planning Commission 9th. Do we have a budget? Do we have a budget meeting then?
No, the night before.
No, on the 17th we have a budget.
What about the 17th?
Well, no, we're having a budget meeting. We've got that's Water Day.
It's too big. No. Okay.
The third Tuesday is sewer and water.
Well, the 19th is a Thursday. No.
What about the 19th?
I just said that, but. I'm wondering if the Planning Commission would find that an appropriate time to be here.
Well, we could do it the night of the Planning Commission. I mean, the fact is, until these are approved, the Planning Commission doesn't have a lot to enforce.
Okay.
They could just set aside their meeting.
Could I ask some comment from the Planning Commission Chair, John? Does that sound?
We could do 4 o'clock. You're going to do 6?
Right.
You basically do 5 o'clock.
We could do 4 or 5 and be done.
All right.
We don't have that much on the agenda.
No.
So then we'll agree with the 18th at 6 o'clock?
And that gives me time to address Dan's question, which is to have these things available to the public with more lead time.
Right.
Okay. 18th, 6 o'clock it is.
Is there any plan in this whole thing, is there some plan then to have those documents available to the public before we have the meeting?
Yes, that's...
Like 2 or 3 days or...
A week.
Hopefully a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do our best.
Sounds right.
Yeah. And worst case scenario, if you see something amiss, we can correct it during the process. That's not unusual for a legislative matter, all the way up until you approve it. So.
Okay.
So where are we?
We're in the council deliberations?
Right. Discussion.
So is there any further discussion, Dan?
Yeah, on these temporary banners, on page 15, it talks about, if I'm in the right place, and where I'm as confused as anybody else, I think, but it says a sign shall for an event, just for an event, when a sign is erected by a charitable or nonprofit organization, this sign shall not be placed more than 7 days prior to the event, and must be removed within 2 days following the event.
I don't know anybody else's experience for sure, but for most events, 7 days is not adequate marketing.
No, not even close.
No.
Okay.
Why can I get in here? Why don't we have some others in here that are 30 days and temporary signs?
You do have some that are allowed for 30 days. This particular one is just for a charitable fundraising event. So if you want to extend the time period before and after, that's fine.
Well, the after may be reasonable. That's just before the 7 days. Is
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't see why it couldn't be 30 days. But
some of them could be vandalized in that time. So I'd say like 10.
You'd have an earthquake. Well, that's a risk that they would take.
I say 10.
The marketing we do, and right now people are doing this chicken coop too, and it doesn't happen until July 23rd or something, and they're marketing the heck out of it already. So it's like,
yeah, exactly. I agree. A month is just barely enough time.
Actually, I just had a comment. I understand about the, you know, the vandalizing, and then you have a banner that looks like, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't that pretty well addressed somewhere else, that it must be in good repair, and can't that be addressed in that if the banner's out there for 30 days, that it must be in good repair, or it must be taken down within, you know, 48 hours or whatever and repaired immediately, or however?
Like the code covers that already. So you would only need to determine how much time.
You're going to make, if it's in disrepair in 10 days, replace it with another one for the remainder of the time.
Right.
So they're going to pay for two signs.
Right. Well, just assuming somebody's going to vandalize it.
No, or weather related.
Oh, that's, yeah, weather.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to make them replace it.
Okay.
30 days would not be inconsistent with other parts of the code.
Okay, well,
I'm trying to consider both sides. I can see an advantage to 30 days.
I do too.
On the behalf of the organization, I can see it very definitely. But I also know that we've had a flag shredded at the senior center overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just shredded. And
from vandals?
So the repair has to be an important part of it.
Yeah.
Look at what happened today.
Yeah.
I think that we ought to consider, for a nonprofit organization that's expending a lot of energy and money to raise money for a worthy cause, you ask them, it'll be a worthy cause, that to just give them 7 days is not the kind of need they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand about vandalism, and I appreciate your comment, Robin, bringing out that there is in the code the aspects of taking care of that. And I tend to agree that 30 days is, you know, we have Frontier Days. Frontier Days is not a nonprofit event. And that's the biggest event that happens in South County. So my input is 30 days is makes it consistent with the other sections of the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
and would serve the nonprofits much better.
And don't forget, once you have a little experience with this, if you feel like things need to be flexed up or tightened, this code is not written in stone. It's easy for you to make adjustments. You're going to have the gap period anyway. So, you know, there are other ways to refine this if you need to.
Is 30 days too long, Dan? Or, I mean, there's a lot of days between 7 and 30.
Well, there it is. You know,
is it 14 or 21?
Well, to me, if they're required to keep it in good condition, it's at their risk of the rest of it. And I think that most people, I mean, right now, the one that Pat Stone was talking about is the Relay for Life, and I think that is when in late June or something, and they're ready to get it going, you know. So 30 days would be less than they probably want it to be.
To ask you the question, since you guys would know, obviously the longer it is, the more sign competition In other words,
exactly.
She wants hers out. The rodeo gets theirs to go out for 30 days. Pretty soon, at these corners, you end up with competing signs. So a church is having a bake sale, and they want to put their banner out for a month, and that's 3 weeks before the rodeo, 3 weeks before the gun raffle. You can end up with this corner that you literally have got an idea of what the reason they propose that is.
Yeah.
It's, there's some amount of time, but you know, you kind of got to have an event, and then you got new events. And 30 days, is that too long to where you end up with 10 events that could all be out there on the corner if you take every nonprofit in town? You know, it's interesting, if you're saying the major community events, say like the rodeo, that's a community-wide event. But if it's just nonprofits, that literally could be a cake feed, you know, whatever it is, it's a spaghetti feed.
There's
so,
just no way
to yeah, and so you just have to decide what do you want. So I'm asking, do you think there's a problem?
You're leading to my next point, and that is, there's also a provision here that temporary banners or decorations shall be permitted only if the applicant is conducting an event or activity in the city that's being identified as a community event by the city council for purposes of identifying a geographic area or zone of the city. I guess that applies to the same. It's possible that I'm in some unknown territory.
Where are you?
That's on page 16, B. So the city has to create a list of events that qualify to be considered community events, and according to this, they have to be located in the city. So when we get our new rodeo grounds, we can't advertise any of that stuff because it's not in the city.
Yeah, you only have jurisdiction within the city, so that's the only place.
But the event is just on the edge outside the city, but they want to sign inside the city.
Well, then they would work with a property owner to get the sign.
He's talking about putting the sign downtown. The event is held outside the city, but it's a city event.
Yeah. That's just something the council would authorize.
Well, B says it's in the city. It has to be in the city. Point B.
Yeah, only if the applicant is conducting an event.
Maybe center around the city.
Well, I don't know why it matters. I mean, if it's a community event, and we have it on the list as a community event, why does it matter? Why does it
have already said that the community goes beyond the city limits.
I'm just saying we should strike that.
Yeah,
I'm still for 10 days.
I think you were going to wait a minute.
What my point back to you on that first your question, Rick, was that if we're going to have a list of what's acceptable community events, that's going to eliminate all these mom and pop little deals. You know.
Yeah.
Plus, we don't have a history of having a problem with it.
Right. Deb, is that normal for the city to approve what events meet for a community event?
Well, when you're trying to be flexible and not create a lot of hoops for people to go through, cost and all that, if it's identified as a community event, what this code does is it gives it more flexibility. If it's just a regular sign on a building, they go through a process and pay a fee. A lot of these would be without a fee as long as it's for a community event.
Like she says, you're going to have, you know, you almost have to adopt something at some point. You're going to tweak them and fix them.
I'll take in the city out.
Okay, I don't worry with that.
Okay. Adele? Okay.
What's the difference? Instead of going the 30 days or the 10 days, go for 2 weeks, 14 days. Isn't that adequate time?
Yeah. So what James is pointing out is there's a typo that would fix the whole thing. So after in the city, it should be or that has been identified as a community event. So we have both. Mm.
Ah. Typos.
Dang typos.
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah, thanks, guys. So with regard to the signs for charitable fundraising events and the 7 days or 30 days, you can't predict it. If they were all there at the same time, they could all be there for the 7 day period too. So the question really then becomes back to Dan's point, which is, you know, in the business world, 30 days maybe gives people time to understand the issue more.
See the sign two or three times,
it's not a big deal.
I don't think 30 is a huge thing.
It's really not a big deal. Yeah. The reality is, you know what happens with these.
They're
going to go put them on the corner, and no one from the city is going to go down and take it down. And if you went through a process of sending them a letter that they're in violation, the event will be over. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, it still looks like crap, which we're trying to get away from. Mm-hmm.
And for the temporary signs, that is a challenge. And I know, Stu, you were at 10 days. Could you live with 30?
It's a big, thick document. Everyone's going to have to...
I like Don's suggestion, 14.
Oh, I didn't hear 14.
Yeah, Don suggested 14.
I said, split the difference and go down to 2 days, 14 days.
Yeah,
I'd go for
60.
I would too.
Well,
I can only comment that I think that Dan is right on target with the idea that you're after getting people's attention that this event is going to be there, and I think that 7 days is absolutely too short. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, the first time, you may not even come into town this week and see it, and then it's there and you've already got plans made. And then 30 days actually gives it that amount of time for the advertising effect and the money you put into having the banner made. Beyond that, I'm game.
Okay, I agree that 7 days is too short, but I think 30 days is too long, because they just get, you go drive by them every, you know, day after day for 30 days, and I'll go with 14.
Let's compromise and pick 21.
Nope, sorry.
I'd like to comment. You know, we're all talking like the only advertising we're going to put on at all is this big banner, and we want it up for 30 days. We're not talking about the advertising that's going to be in the local newspapers, the advertisers, and all of this. I mean, certainly, the banner is necessary. I can understand that, or not necessarily necessary, but it's desirable. But really, after considering it, I think 30 days is too much. I think we'd split the difference and go for 2 weeks. I think that should be acceptable. And I think with all the other advertisement, that your word should be able to get out. And as far as a banner taking care of people that are trances, they might look at the banner, but I doubt very much if it's going to deter somebody to stay here for a week to go to any one function that you have here.
I will actually, since we do have the opportunity to look and talk about this again, and by the time the word gets out, I will concede that at this time, I can understand 2 weeks. But I think that there's going to be a lot of input. So we're not closing the hearing.
And so you're going from 7 to 14, and then you can look at it next meeting.
That's
I mean, this is just what she can read.
Does that sound all right?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Read it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Adele?
Yeah.
Okay. Dan?
Okay. I leave it open. I'd like to hear from more people like Jake Strauss and some of the people that do events.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some people have experience in this field, because I'm only kind of in the middle. I don't know. But I don't like seeing a lot of banners floating around either. But I don't know that I agree with Don that it doesn't help tourism. I think it does help tourism. Somebody's coming from here going up to Leavenworth. If they know there's an event here on a certain day, they may stop on the way back or plan their trip to make it back. So I think there is a benefit, or else people wouldn't do it. Because these banners are not cheap.
Right.
I think, a couple hundred dollars for a large banner, I don't know. So people wouldn't invest in them if they didn't work.
Adele?
So I was just going to ask Robin, generally, how far in advance do people come in to do their signs?
They're looking at 45 days, 60 days. I mean, 30 days is a tight time frame for most of them.
That's right.
Because they want them out. One of the things that we have here is that we only have a monthly newspaper. So if it's an article, we may very well miss that deadline, or somebody may miss the deadline. In a month's time, you've forgotten that, oh yeah, the first of the month I read, you know, Jade's Jazz is having a festival. Well, now's the 28th, and I'm planning for next month, and I've forgotten it. So I think 2 weeks is too short, and I think it's being addressed by that it has to be in good repair. And then that takes care of, okay, let's get the crap off of there and you know, have something that looks decent. Historically, we don't have a problem with, you know, too many signs generally at an intersection or anything. Could it happen? Sure, but we haven't in the past had that problem. But I know JHS, you know, Frontier Days, all of these, particularly events like Frontier Days or the Rodeo Association, people are driving through the first part of June, maybe kids are getting out of school or whatever, and they drive by and they, oh man, they've got a rodeo. I heard something about that. They go, I'm going to come back on the 4th of July. And I think if you have it for 2 weeks, you may miss some of that tourism opportunity.
Robin, thank you very much for your input.
I don't understand. Thank you. I sort of don't care. I just want to hear what the public and the people doing the events want. So.
Yeah, and then I think as long as we have the restriction of removing the sign when the event is over, then that'll take away some of the clutter.
That's a good one.
I think we basically agree that we're going to set it at 14 and look for further comment and look at this again.
One thing I'd like to know, when they place the banner, is it going across 97 or is it going downtown in La Pine?
You can't put it across 97.
It's going to be downtown La Pine?
It could be anywhere that is allowed by the zone. Across the highway, I don't believe it's permitted anymore.
You can't do across the highway.
Okay, well, then that brings my point that was just said, well, if somebody's driving through and sees the sign, how many people are driving through La Pine that drive through downtown La Pine and don't go quite straight up 97?
No, it could be.
And if your sign's downtown, it's not going to get seen by the transits.
This is council session. Donna, I agree. That is a good point. We know that down on the end of town by Taco Bell and in that area there, you see a rodeo and Frontier Days putting their signs up down there.
But those don't go up 30 days before.
They should.
They
don't.
Certainly do.
Yeah. I think we need to just come back to this.
So my direction so far is just put 14 in and we'll talk about it more.
Put it in pencil.
Right, with a big eraser.
Okay, mark it negotiable.
Okay.
We got that resolved. No, we didn't.
That is a chicken number.
Do we have any other council comments? No, I heard.
I have something else, but okay. Somebody needs an opportunity.
Stu, do you have any comments?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you have any further comments about any of this?
Nope. Thank you.
Don?
I'm through, thank you.
Okay. Adele?
No.
David?
Uh-huh. What page are you on?
I'm not. I'm just asking you a question. The county, I think, has an exemption. I know that we have some exemptions for signs, but they have an exemption for signs that are for a tourist-oriented business. It's any legal, cultural, historical, recreational, educational, or entertaining activity or unique or unusual commercial or nonprofit activity, the major portion of whose income or visitors are derived from its normal business season. Anyway, it's a tourism sign that's exempted from some of the other things. And an example is the one down in Weed. It's a big sign. It's like, and they list all the events that they have in the community.
Yeah.
And it's 24 or 28 feet tall and that kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes you see them with like Rotary Club, Lions,
all those things. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is the language I just got copied out of the counties.
We have something similar for exemptions. So what I could do is double check and make sure that these descriptors are in there so that we're totally covered.
Because I think the exemptions we have now just have to do with government signs or something.
And we have nonprofit listed as
is
well
it?
As...
Okay, I lost the page where it's at. So I
could do that.
And, you know, kind of reason being, it probably won't happen, you know, within the time here, but the Ford Leadership Group is going to be proposing assigning something like that. And it'll probably fit within the stuff that I can just see in the future someday that, that you know, there might be an interest in having something that promotes tourism here. And and that's pretty important to our community, so I thought that would be something to consider.
No, that's a great comment. And don't forget that we have a big chunk on the comprehensive plan that's meant for tourist wayside. And the key
not in town, way up north, right?
Oh, it's in town. It's that big green area right in the middle of town.
Well, it's not in town. It's in the city, but it's not in the town.
That big
It's out.
It's at 2 miles between Wiki Up and Taco Bell.
So we have a variety of areas. That's the biggest chunk that's on there.
Yeah.
So it's we'll have plenty of stuff to support that. And what if the council's comfortable, I will add these descriptors into our existing temporary sign description.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I think that's all I have right now.
Okay.
I'm like some of the other commenters. I have a hard time staying awake to get through this, and I think if we had some graphics and stuff, I'd be better.
Okay. And I think chapterization and some headers would help as well as the index.
Yeah.
We get so focused, or at least I get so focused on getting the guts in straight that, you know, that, that'll come.
I think at this time, after all of our questions and everything, we need to make the decision about leaving the hearing open.
Yeah, I thought we did. Yeah.
Motion to leave the hearing open.
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
So we will meet on the May 18th at 6 p.m.
Yes.
Yes.
And our goal is to have materials when we
meet. You'll meet earlier with planning commission. You guys can work out the time on that, whether it's 4 or 5. But I think 5 an hour I would be plenty, and then that way you don't have so many hours here.
I know.
Are we planning on making the notice that there will be this information available at a time? Can you give us some input to a lead time?
Yeah, we'll put it on the website, and that's the best way to do it. When you continue the hearing, it allows you to go forward without having to re-notice everything legally.
Right.
So I think the best thing is to get the data to Patty so they know that there's a revised and updated version. People in the audience who have a concern know that we're extending the hearing, and you've left it open for all topics, so they'll be able to talk.
All right.
And we'll be ready with the adoption ordinance as well as the resolution for the SDC section.
Okay. We'd like to thank you very much for coming along.
We're making good progress. I know it's slow and torturous, but there's, you know, we had a person in the audience say, you know, why is it done this way? Because there is no other way. And this is how you do it. You start with the foundation of the comp plan, and then you build up with your implementing codes. And then there's just
we're
no
ahead
other way.
Of Damascus.
We're ahead of Damascus.
It's already ahead of us. Mm-hmm.
They said they'd come and talk or, you know, do anything that you needed, which is always nice. And I think the best thing is to get a meeting quickly next week with their key people and make sure we understand the technical issues.
Okay. Item 6 on the agenda is other matters. Since there were no added agenda items, is there any other matters the council would like to...
Just a couple updates. Yes, Pat. BioGreen basically got an email today that's really BioGreen stuck on getting a contract on power sales agreement. So less on probably legal issues at this point and more on it's a BioGreen finding someone to buy their power. So that came out. So the LUB appeals on is been suspended by both parties. That we'll have to you know, it's a business decision of people and then how they buy and sell power. The Trip 97 partnership, which so I went and met with the Bend and Redmond city managers and stuff the other day, and so we will be part of that, and that part, including our name, we'll be signing off on it. So something will come around at some point. We will have to contribute $2,500 for next fiscal year. Everyone, it's based on population, and I told them we would probably do that. So we'll be meeting monthly in Redmond on that on Tuesday mornings. This is to move traffic from Mathers to Lapine quicker, and working with ODOT, and it's an experiment, is what it is. So, Midstate Franchise, which their board of directors, I believe, approved it. They met Monday, so the Midstate board has approved our franchise. So it'll come to us in May at our meeting. And that will take effect July 1. And so be prepared, we'll have a ordinance for us. And cable, since it's out today, what we're looking at, cable road as an experiment to start clearing the trees and the brush back. First of all, we graded it, you saw that, some of you, and then there were some spots that needed gravel, so yesterday I went out and met with the contractor and looked at the spots, and so I told him to go ahead, so he's putting some gravel out. So Don was with me, I picked Don up at his house, and since I was in his neighborhood, and we went on down and looked at it, and they were throwing gravel out, and the grader was there, and
good job,
you know. So we did that. Then we went down and we had to sit over on Cable Road, and what the deal is, that we've talked a little before, but when the grader grades the drain pit, the grader's on its side a little bit. And then the calves of anything, it's hitting all these trees, and if you look, what's happened is the road's been narrowing because of people's trees, basically. And the power line sign, you'll find, is being cleaned out by Midstate, and it's like 3/4 less number of trees. And the road is moving that way, because just by nature, you can't grade it as well on the one side, so you do it on the other. And the traffic actually over years is slowly moving to one side, so it's no longer centered. and if you actually look, you can see where the ditch was 5 feet over, but over time, it's filled in. So so we're going to do a plan to go out there, and that can be very controversial. So we're going to do it with kind of a starter glove that you would do in Lapine, not go back to the property line is my thought. We would stay several feet from the property line, so give people a buffer. You know, you're not going to go to the line and say that tree is 6 inches over, and we're talking several feet buffer give them. You know, so in other words, it's just the kind of the bad ones that we're going to go in. But what we would do is we're taking photos of each property. We got the address and the photos. We've got the county tax map. She's starting to research the names and addresses. We will send a letter to each person on Cato Road. We'll include a picture of the front of their property. And then we will have a meeting over in there at maybe like the school over on Roslyn, at Roslyn School. And they can come in and then also offer, we will actually meet on site with anyone that wants and go out and we'll walk and look at their trees and their issues. And so that's kind of the plan. And we'll go in and it'll cost us a couple grand to go in and clear and mow this down a little bit. And then it'll give everyone an idea to see what it looks like, splitting the difference between where you could be and everything. And then you got, and I don't know, maybe you do a couple of those roads a year, because there's a whole lot of roads. And all those dead-end roads are really growing in. So unless someone thinks it's a bad idea, that's... It's road maintenance, it's your right-of-way. And the problem is, the longer it goes, the bigger around the tree gets, and the more they become attached to it. So you're better off doing it with the tree smaller with less attachment. Some people will have no problem. You can almost tell where your troubles are going to come just by walking it, by looking at it. Because the people that have some of their own trees within that couple feet or on the other side of their fence if they have one or something. In other words, when you take down 4 feet of these trees, they still have lots of privacy. But then you see some that have cleared the land right out to the fence, and the only thing between the road and their house is clear out in the road. And so when you take it down, suddenly their house sticks out. Those are the ones that will cause a few problems.
You gotta be nice about it.
Yeah. And then the other thing, ODOT, I sent an email, but I actually got the dates now. ODOT's gonna pave downtown from the 23rd to the 27th. We may put out a flyer or something, and the ODOT called me. Actually, it's funny, an hour before, after I sent that email out, they were on my message machine. It was by accident. Now I do have the date, so it's the week before Memorial Day. They are going to pave. They're going to basically say it's 2 to 3 days. They're going to cut, dig it out, relay it, take out the ruts, go one direction one day, basically one direction back the following day, and then probably some cleanup. And they said, you know, they're moving along pretty quick, but there'll be detours, and you know, you can always get a complaint. So. Businesses, I mean, there's an hour or two when they're in front of you that someone can't turn left. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just part of maintenance of a road, but we're getting it done before Memorial Day. And it'll look good when it's done.
Yeah.
So, that's all for tonight, since we had enough other stuff.
Okay.
The Louis budget, Sid and I met with our CPA folks in Bend again, so that's coming together good, and we're breaking the budget up into different funds and different things. We will have to do a supplemental budget, and actually we might do that at our May meeting. It's a resolution we have to pass because of the City Hall, and we're remodeling, and that ups the funds enough that, so we'll they're putting that together. It's just a procedural thing, and you probably do one every year for the next several years, because there's so many things coming and going that you can't predict at this point. And when you get sewer and water the first year, you're bound to have one. So.
Okay. Comment?
And you have thing, we're going to get the 50, we should get the check tomorrow from the Cascade Gas, 50, oh, yeah. 58,000 something dollars. that they
underpaid.
That they underpaid, but once sent them a certified letter, they
got on it.
Yeah.
Really?
And that's it.
Okay. Number 7, public comment. Vicki?
After listening to that lady that owns the
sign lady,
and I know Robin, I got to thinking, it's like, so I'm assuming, or what she said was, Deborah's going to contact them and work with them, and then is she going to be kind of redoing some of the sign?
Yes.
Okay. And then once that's done, then will the public have an opportunity to review it?
A week before.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, my question is, okay, so let's, I'll go ahead and read through, because I'm a realtor, and I know as far as signs.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to see, and actually I didn't say it, the last one is, if she could have, besides the chart and all that, but pictures of what, because I'm a visual person and a lot of people are, when you're reading this whole, all those words about diameter, it means nothing to me. I need to see pictures. And I don't know if she can do that. Is that something that she can go ahead and do?
Yes.
Okay, because I like pictures.
And that, I think that was brought out, Vicki, very clearly, that the need to simplify this and bring it down to that. And I think Dan even alluded to the fact that he's a picture person too, as I am. That's why I buy the USA Today.
Okay, and then the other thing is, if you do have, once they've gotten together, and even the public, does the public, do you have a vehicle that the public can say, I don't care for this paragraph, is there a way for them to email their comments or the response instead of having to come and read it to you?
There is. Letters and emails are adequate for public input up until the time the hearing's closed, and I would recommend anybody doing that. It's like Mike Jensen did, because he couldn't be here tonight. It's a very, very creditable method of getting public input. So, and that'll get looked at, and worked on.
Thank you.
Okay, is that it? I would entertain a motion to... Sorry.
That's all right. John Thomas, Planning Commission Chair. Just a question and a comment. On the question, can the city newsletter that we're printing out now, can it be used to for educational purposes, such as explaining where people's property line is, where the road easements are, and everything? Sometimes the newsletter might have to proclaim bad news as well as good. So I would suggest using the newsletter as an educational tool also. And then on the comment, I encourage all the counselors to please read again the comprehensive plan draft that has been in the works for many, many years. And I encourage the council to read that comprehensive plan prior to next hearing date. That'll help you make decisions.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments, please? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it unanimously.